Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Now, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. How about yourself?
Doing all right. I am whispering codes, people.
What is Crushboards?
It's kind of like Contra.
Oh. Why aren't you whispering that to me if it's like Contra?
Oh. It's like Contra.
Well, there you go. That's the way. Yeah, because like, honestly, I feel like Contra is one of those, the running gun style is one of those things where I feel like as long as the game is competent, you don't really tire. They're always fun. You just look forward to another one where you can see what kind of cool weapons they provide for the game, and you just, you know, dive in, get it in. You know?
Yeah, Elden Ring's pretty cool.
So what else you got? We need a running gun ring. We need a running gun Elden Ring. There it is. That's the sequel we need.
Elden Contra.
There y'all know is. I gotta come in and do my bit. What up, you guys? I miss y'all.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's contraband.
For now, turn off speakerphone. We're like doing this now.
I had a good pun and no one took it.
I didn't hear it because you were garbled.
Yeah, no. I said
the sequel. A good sequel to Elden Ring would be contraband, but.
Pretty good.
Oh, Lord. So, I guess SML Podcast, I'm Joe. Pernell's here. Chris is here. Brooke's back. Yay! Aki's here for some reason.
Because Brooke's here.
Oh, geez.
Hey, Brooke. How you doing?
I gave her a hose so she can spray you.
All right, word.
Thank you.
Those are squirt bottles. Damn.
No, you need more than a squirt bottle for Aki. You just gotta, like, you got to, like, fire hose and just spray her away.
Y'all, how long has it been? It's been like a month and a half. What?
It has. How have you been? How was your holiday break, Brooke?
Dude, it was so awesome. As y'all know, because you're actually my friends, I started a new job that's really cool, Broken in Gaming, and I'm really happy about that. I had to go to Universal Studios for the first time, moved to a new apartment because since I got a new job, I'm not as worried about not having a paycheck this month. All kinds of cool stuff happened. But more important than any of that, you may have heard, I did become Elden Lord.
Ooh.
Pause for applause. So for the duration of the show, especially since Tim is not here, which is really pissing me off, you can just call me Elden Lord. That's my new name now.
Well, I just like that. He's recording his own show right now. I should just pull up his stream right now and play it on and be like, this is what he's doing right now.
Do it. The hustle is real.
I wish it were earlier because then if it weren't so late later, we could just go raid his thing.
Who knows? We might finish before him because his triple radio episodes can get long. I know their end of year show is like 4.5 hours.
Already. Is that the same podcast he does the year in rap for?
Yeah.
That's like, that was Fat Gatsby or something.
Yeah, triple radio. Fat Gatsby, same thing.
Those are very different words.
Same very umbrella, same group of people.
Okay, there we go. That's the stuff. I was like, wait a minute, I don't understand anymore. But like, yeah, he's a good dude. Yeah, but the thing I like the most, like you were talking about at one point, you were telling me a story, and I hope it's TMI, but I think it's more like a fun story that you were like introducing yourself to your peers. It was like, I'm the Elden. You can refer to me as the Elden Lord.
You guys, I probably shouldn't tell y'all, but y'all are probably my best friends. I don't get along with a ton of people, and Chris is probably like my best bud. But I do know other people, and you guys are the only one who gave a shit that I became Elden Lord, and it pissed me off. I made a video, I made a rabbit video, and it just kind of bummed me out. I was like, man, nobody cares. This took me hundreds of hours because I'm fucking stupid, and nobody cares. So I was feeling kind of sad, and like, then I met my work team, and like nobody on my team was a gamer at all. And I was like, come on, I just, you know, finally my dreams have come true and I can't talk to anyone about this. But then they added me to some Slack channels for the rest of the company. And I was like, man, pretty big deal. I don't know if you guys care, but just became Elden Lord and like everybody freaked out. Like,
oh my God,
I got added to the Soulsborne channel.
I
really felt like, Joe, I was crying to you. You were like, how is it? Are you making new friends? Because, you know, I have my issues making friends sometimes. And I was like, no.
I was treating you like a kid going off to summer camp. I'm like, hope you make friends. Did you pack snacks?
Brooke knows the summer camp.
Oh, man. So I was like, man, I'm only really. But yeah, I was just.
So you're Elden Lord.
I was very happy, and they were like, good job. And then it was pretty funny, I guess, because I'm a lady. They were like, oh, you should try to do it without co-op next time. And then I get to drop the bomb. I was like, I didn't do any co-op this game just to prove that I could do it.
The funny part about that, too. Seriously. The funny part about that is like do it without co-op. It's like, how about you kiss my ass? I play it how the fuck I want. I had fun. That's all that matters.
Dude, and what's sad is, like, it is that part of me that is self-conscious about being, like, a lady gamer. And, like, even if I were a dude gamer, I have my mental challenges, you know? So I kind of wanted to prove it to myself. But if it wasn't for people thinking like that, I would have done more co-op. But, you know,
If you do that replay, you can. Because I can tell you, like, the first time I played Dark Souls, I had the same mindset. Was like, co-op is a crutch. I don't need that shit. I could do it on my own. And then I did. And what ended up happening was it didn't really. It's like a slight accomplishment, but learning what I missed out on by all the stories people were telling me about their co-op game runs and stuff. I was like, co-op sounds more fun than anything. Like the stories people have.
Is it possible just to turn off the online to that game?
I ended up doing that because I like to try to figure things out for myself, but it can take me forever to do that. So like they did this really cool thing in this game where like players can leave notes in the online version. So you can see a blood stain and be like, oh, this guy fell off that rock. I better not go over there. But, you know, they were trying to help me out. But like a couple like riddles, physical riddles in the world. Like I read a note and I just be curious and then it would be like a secret door over here. And even though that's really cool, that makes the game feel alive and I'm actually really happy they did that, I ended up turning it off because I just kind of wanted to do this playthrough completely blind and spoiler free.
That's fair.
Yeah, I want to do that too.
It was fun for me, but now I'm really looking forward to playing it again and reading those notes and finding all the shit I didn't find before. So that'll be cool. Sorry to cut you off, Chris.
No, you're fine. I thought you were done.
Story of everyone's life.
Yes.
Spoiling exactly. Us, by the way, is our good friend Trivium Champ, who just dropped over 200 bitties in chat, like 280, something like that. He just like that filled up the cup and then dropped bits and they exploded. It was awesome. I love when people do that. I love watching the bits fly. But thank you. Thank you, Trivium Champ. You are the best.
Look at them bits fly.
That contents of that cup look inedible.
There's diamonds and there's hearts and there's shards of glass.
All of that's edible.
And puppies.
You probably don't want to eat it. Boy, Lucky Charms has really changed since the 80s.
You know it.
Anyway. No, I was just going to say, how dare one of my favorite people interrupt me while I'm trying to say that I finally got a PS5. So.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's a good system. Don't let it on purpose.
I'm even more sorry for you then.
He's not even sorry.
You're not even on this episode, Aki. What are you talking
about? There it is. The only real issue I had with
the gloves are off.
Fuck you.
The only issue I've had with the PS5 that was like easy to not really care about issue after like a week is a absurdly large console.
Mega
box.
It is. That thing is so awkwardly huge. Like, I have it tucked behind my TV because there's nowhere else it could go.
And it has to stay laying flat, too.
No, you can have it vertical.
Yeah,
not
it's,
if you want to keep it functioning forever.
Mine's been fine.
Are you referring to that article that someone put out where they were like, being vertical's bad, here's why.
No, I'm talking about the literal, there's a mechanical flaw in the system.
That's what I mean.
That doesn't shock
me. The video was about that mechanical flaw you're talking about.
Oh, then probably, yes. There's liquid metal cooling, and apparently it isn't plugged properly. So leaving it to where it's standing vertically, it'll eventually start dripping out and dripping down. And what's directly under it is, important parts like the motherboard.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, you mean if it touches it, it shorts it out and destroys it.
You mean this is a PlayStation that might break pretty soon due to some mechanical failure? Oh, no.
Shocking.
Five in a row.
It's all over again.
Five in a row. Pretty much.
Why do you think you're surprising me with this information?
Like I know every... the PS2 had a flaw like that. The PS4 has this weird thing where it just auto-barfs your disc. I don't know why the hell it does that.
PS4 had a lot of issues. It had hard drive issues, overheating issues. The PS1 had the issue with the CD tray being made of plastic, so you had to flip the fucker upside down to actually have track for it to roll on.
I do remember that. That was stupid as shit.
What? PS2 had laser issues. Yeah.
The original model PS1 with the button that you press to jack up the tray. Sometimes you got to a point where you had to flip the system upside down while it was playing so that the disc could be read properly because it would just float above the laser. It was stupid.
God.
That's why the PS1 written out as a word was so popular when it was a thing because people were like, fire that disc. Because
it was a remodel and it wasn't,
Besides my original PlayStation, and one of the PlayStation 2s I had, I have yet to destroy any of these PlayStations because I play Nintendo systems. That's the best way to avoid breaking a PlayStation.
Is to not use
my PlayStation. I will give that. Like Nintendo, I'm sure they've had other consoles with issues that I just didn't experience, but the only one that ever had an issue where I was like, I gotta return this thing for repairs was the Wii. The original Wii, the graphics card went to shit. I had to return it. It overheated.
The only time that any of my Nintendo systems have gone out on me was my own fault for like opening them and modding them and stuff. So, which is why I don't do that.
So you didn't experience the Wii issue when you did the Wii Connect 24/7 that they had?
No, my original Wii did eventually go out because like within a couple of months of owning it, I had some guy like drunk at a party like install a pirate chip. And when I was like, well, I need to update this so I can play Mario Galaxy, I just ripped the thing out of the back of it and then it kept going for like years, but then eventually started having problems. I was like, I bet this is probably because it's been opened and messed with like within just a couple of months of being a thing. So, and then I got a second Wii and that's lasted me like 12 years. So,
well, that's something you thankfully dodged, but that was a surprisingly odd omission on their part. But admittedly, it was also their first time doing a system that had that sort of functionality to it. But apparently, if you left the system on Wii Connect, which is when your system went to sleep, like it was pretty much always in sleep mode.
I remember that thing.
It would ultimately overheat and affect your graphics card. And I realized that when I bought Resident Evil, it was like one of the Resident Evil 4 remakes or whatever, the one that had the Wiimote support, and all the graphics were just like busted and choppy. And I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was like, wow, this game is flawed to shit. The graphics are terrible. No, it was the system that was bad. So I had to return
it. Wii's over there like, help me.
Connect me to a paramedic.
But so now that I have a PS5, I've got a shopping list of like 10 games.
Which ones? Nosy.
Well, Elden Ring, I'm going to actually buy that on PS5, I think, because I'm like, oh, I just started it. My PS4 version is the European version, so like
it doesn't have like a free upgrade on PS5 or anything.
He has the European version though, so it wouldn't count anyway.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, region I don't free. Think so.
I don't think it does. It's region. It's a different region.
Region free doesn't matter.
The console's region free, but as far as like the stores and stuff go, it's not. He'd have to get the European version of that if it was available, which means he's a European PSN account and all that shit, so it's a lot of hassle.
I think that Pernell is right there, but I'll check it out anyway. But anyways, I'm talking about like games on discs, So, well, I mean, as much of on the disc as they are.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got that. Lots of Final Fantasies. Like, basically, I bought a PlayStation for... This is my third PlayStation to purchase specifically for a Final Fantasy game, and the second one for Final Fantasy VII. So that's where I'm at on that. It's going to be a Final Fantasy machine eventually.
Mm.
I already got my remake Intergrade, which I had been wanting for a while. Upgraded my FF7 to PS5, and I'm ready.
What were the other nine games, Chris? There's not nine Final Fantasy.
I said Elden Ring and Final Fantasy. That's all of them.
That's like that's 10 games right there. That's 10 games.
Close. No,
for real, they got what the Stranger in Paradise and the Crisis Core, which somebody...
Yeah, Stranger in Paradise is freaking hilarious.
Yeah. I want to experience the hilarity there. And
that one too.
Where's Chaos?
Chaos. I can't remember the other ones I added, but yeah, it's just, you know, stuff. Maybe I'll get one of the fancy games too.
Hey, Purnell, did you hear what's back?
Pogs? Of course.
No, Mountain Dew Pitch Black.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Mm,
and it's not grape anymore.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So what is it now? Is it like blackberry?
It is Mountain Dew with a blast of dark citrus punch.
Well, they went to like a freaking like, you know, rain, like a dark jungle and just like came back with like a dark berry.
Yeah, I don't like, why didn't they name it Pitch Black 3 or something? Like, this is not what Mountain Dew fans expected. We thought we were getting great back.
Like, no, they had to abandon it for dark citrus.
Those sons of bitches.
The evil citrus. The anti-dew. Dark citrus. Like, come on, guys. We like what we like. But admittedly, who am I kidding? I'll drink all that shit. It just Mountain Dew drives me. Oh, Bob, would you take my link and apply for that damn hot sauce?
Mountain Dew hot? No, I don't do hot sauce. I can't.
I know you don't. I want it. Be another entry for me. I want the sauce.
Okay,
I'll let Baja Blast hot sauce. It's the most stupid thing, and I want to eat it.
That sounds good, actually.
I'll believe it when I eat it. Baja Blast hot sauce just seems baffling to me. And this is coming from a guy who had 7-Up hot sauce. Like, I don't know how I feel about this, but I want it.
I told y'all I was working at Taco Bell in high school the night they brought in Baja Blast, right?
Well, no, really?
But now,
legend. Yeah,
oh, my
were
God.
Were there riots?
They replaced the mug root beer line, and it was like at night. And I'm from like a smaller town in Florida. And yeah, he came in and he replaced the line. I was like, "What are you doing, man? That's my shit. That's my sauce." And he's like, "Nah, man, you're gonna try this." And we were all like, "Don't take away our root beer, man." He was like, "Nah, at first you're gonna try it. It's gonna taste like soap, and you're gonna be like, I hate this." He's like, "But trust me, you're gonna be thinking about it later." And we were like, "Whatever, man, get out of here." He switched out. He took the root beer away, and we all tried it. And we were like, "This is bullshit." But later that night, we all wanted more.
It was like Woodstock. It was like Woodstock all over again. Whoa, bro.
I just like this idea of, like, you know, the corporate man coming in and taking the small town's root beer supply.
Oh my God!
Wheeling it away
in parks. You can't
mug root beer, it. Joe. Mug root beer.
The first one's always free.
Yeah.
Nah, it's always free if you work at Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I want that hot sauce. I was like, it drives me nuts with Mountain Dew. Like, I get it in a sense because scarcity breeds, you know, fervency or fervor. But it drives me nuts how they come up with all these flavors and different concepts. The thing that I want more companies to do, but then they're always like, limited time, bitch, get in there and get your sugar now. You know, we got this cool hot sauce. We got it. We got wizards in the kitchen, but we're only making 700 bottles. Put your name in the hat. You might win a bottle.
Yeah, I hate the limited shit that they're doing. Like, if you're going to make a flavor, release it for everyone. Don't make it a contest exclusive or a mail away. Like, knock it the fuck off. Let me just give you $2 and let me buy a bottle of your sugar water that's going to make me die sooner. Just,
yeah, like, didn't you have like a fucking, you had a s'mores Pepsi.
I did.
And I'm sort of thinking like, how in the world is that limited? There's a s'mores Pepsi, and we can't fucking buy it. Like,
the thing is, there wasn't a s'mores Pepsi. There was a graham cracker Pepsi, a chocolate Pepsi, and a marshmallow Pepsi.
And you got all three?
I got one can of each.
They sold it as a s'mores pack, right? That's what it was.
They were not good.
Oh my God. We should have known.
I want to be the judge of that. That's the point. I want to do it.
I had high hopes for the marshmallow one, too, which allegedly we're getting Peeps Pepsi this year.
God, again, is this going to be
actually released
again, though?
Actually released this year.
I will buy the fuck out of that. I was so mad when they limited it last time. I am the Peeps man. Back in the day before, you know, I tried to lose weight, I was the guy that was known for like hitting up all the drugstores after Easter and buying like the entire boxes of Peeps and shoving them in a closet.
Like, Trivium Champ saying Peach Pepsi sounds lit. Peach Mellow Yellow from the Coke Freestyle machines is the greatest drink I have ever had.
What is it?
Peach Pepsi Mellow Yellow.
Oh, I drink that shit. Oh. Yeah, those Freestyle machines are amazing.
Next time you go to Wendy's or somewhere with a Freestyle machine, get the Peach Mellow Yellow. Oh, my Lord.
You walk in and go, sir, is this a Wendy's? Yes, sir, this is a Wendy's. All right. Good. Give me the drink. Give me the sauce.
I wish I could convince our local Burger King to put it on the DoorDash menu so we could just order it that way.
That'd be awesome.
It needs to happen. Your instructions, peach, hold button for 2 seconds. Raspberry syrup, hold button for 5 seconds. Coke, let the cup overflow. There you go. There's my secret recipe. Hook it up. And you take a sip when the guy's at the door. Like, what the fuck? You held it for 7 seconds. You ruined it.
Dude, they finally put that late night Jack in the Box menu on Uber Eats. Now I can get my chicken and tater melt without having to go over there. Finally.
That thing's good.
Have Jack in the Box too. Oh, by the way, without spoiling where you live, I'm just going to give you a detail. I am officially coming to visit that area in March. So... We need to work out some details. I'm only going to be there for a few days, and one of them is a wedding. But I want to hang out with you and Carrie.
Yeah, we're going to come to the parking lot, and I'm going to bring my 6-foot card table, and you're going to take breaks to play Caverna in between, like, the wedding stuff.
You joke, but I would do that shit. I'd be out there in a suit with a drink.
You know that wait for the wedding food is always like 6 hours. So, I mean, you're going to have plenty of time.
There you go. This is a light card table. We can bring it with us.
Just think about it. This will be the first wedding where everybody's bringing it. Come on, who's going to go on the dance floor? I can officially be like, I got better shit to do. Play cards
on the dance floor.
Playing Hero Quest in the back corner of the wedding.
I am 100% do all of that shit. So, you joke. But if you did that, I'm like, hey, guys, look. Just come see me in the parking lot. We can play some Converter.
Just tell everybody you smoke cigarettes now, and they'll be like, man. For now, dude.
I don't understand. It was better when he was a tobacco addict, but now he just plays cards? What the fuck? We need an intervention. Big C got him.
People start taking nicotine because they want whatever you're having. They're like, Fernell's having a great time at this wedding.
he's hitting the fun sauce. Look it up. I'm like, you goddamn right.
Is fun sauce like Baja Blast sauce?
I would say so, except you produce your own. You don't have to pay Mountain Dew for it.
By the way, I love how you described it would taste like soap, because there's an Old Spice, the Wolfthorn flavor. It smells like Baja Blast.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
I don't know, but that's
the secret to the recipe.
That's
maybe the originated
flavor of deodorant I wear.
Maybe that was the secret origin of Baja Blast. Someone licked some deodorant and was like, holy shit, we got a product here.
I mean, you know that the like people in charge of like developing new menu items at Taco Bell are like, hey man, what if you could like drink soap?
we'll get our boys in the lab on it right away.
Hey, smell
Boys
this.
And labs are like,
man,
whoa,
dude,
cool.
Smell this. Smell this. I want something that tastes like that.
That's me with every scented candle.
Nice.
I think that's the scented goddamn candles. Always, those things are so dangerous. You're sleeping. You get the whiff of, oh, man, fresh baked cookies. And you run downstairs. It's like, the fuck is this? Oh, that's my new candle. Check it out.
It's a wax candle. Fuck.
I want the cookies. Where are the cookies? Okay. Oh, they don't exist, don't you know?
I had this visual of like Brooke taking a pile of candles into like Teyvana, and it's like, I want something that tastes like this.
Man, we can't make all those candle flavors. We can only do one. Like, I don't know what to do about this.
So it's 20 some minutes in. Should we get to the reviews? We don't have that many.
I'm enjoying this conversation more. Let's keep talking. let's keep talking about licking deodorant.
I just know not everyone has all night, so we.
Well, it was good to catch up with y'all. I'm glad we got a little time in. It's been too long.
Hell yeah.
There's always next week, Cornell. We could talk about the Baja Blast barbecue sauce next week.
Have an itinerary ready.
You could ask David Ventura next weekend when he's on. Like, do they have that out there?
It's like, David, tell us more about what your experience is with the Baja Blast. The fuck, what?
I'm going to ask him about mug root beer.
He's going to be like, that I know. I'd love some mug.
Do you think it's the same bulldog that's like 80% of school's mascots?
Whoa, yes. I never thought of this before, but instant yes.
See?
Now you got me wondering how many schools have the mascot of the bulldog. I didn't realize it was that common. Like, I knew it was common here, but not everywhere.
Every high school.
Sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, people were probably like, I bet Chris isn't going to come up with like some original thought-provoking statement about mug root beer.
Did you know the Hootsies and Tootsies were, you know, pretty much brought together by way of a truce made with mug root beer? It's true. It happened.
So should we get to reviews?
I guess. I don't want to.
Unless Purnell can tell us this whole story about the
Hootsies and the Tootsies.
The Hootsies and the Tootsies?
I only know about them because of a goddamn Cards Against Humanity card that people would play. What the fuck are the Hootsies and Tootsies? And I had to look them up finally because I got sick of seeing it. And I was like, oh, they were warring tribes. Okay. But yeah, that's the deal. And also mug root beer.
First game to talk about tonight is a preview. I don't know how else to start this shit anymore. Just got to jump in and do it. Yeah, first game tonight is a preview of Chia, developed and published by Awaseb. It's releasing sometime this year for PS4, PS5, and PC. A tropical open-world adventure. Climb, glide, swim, and sail your boat around a beautiful archipelago in this physics-driven sandbox. Take control of any animal or object you can find and jam on your fully playable ukulele. Purnell and Brooke, both you played this. Who wants to start?
I am hoping that Brooke and I... Go ahead, bro. Get to town.
I can kick us off. Joe, did you get to play this too? I want to know who in the group got a chance to try
I did not. Our friend Andy was supposed to check it out. Unfortunately, he got really busy and was unable to get his written preview in. And then... Chris didn't get time to play it.
Andy, if you're listening, I'm giving you a stern look. I don't know.
You could just throw something at Chris right now if you want. It works that way on Discord. You just throw it and it matters.
He's got some brownie points built up. He's pre-forgiven this time.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you got to play this game, then you already know that Chia is a game about how if you don't get this hungry lady in town a crab to eat, she'll fucking kill you. She shows up with a shotgun, beginning of the game, fires a shot, says she wants to eat a crab. And it is not funny. This is a very serious game about violence and the subjugation of crab fishermen worldwide, which is a much larger issue than we would like to believe.
I am so glad Brooke started this.
Just kidding. While that does happen, this game is very lighthearted. This game's amazing. I really loved it. I'm going to do a thing like we did with Isle of Jura and heartily recommend this game. Just cold out the gate to all Animal Crossing, Stardew Valley lovers, any Harvest Moon lovers. The kind of emphasis if you like games like this, but you like a 3D open world experience on top of that. And if that's what you're looking for, this is a seriously, like, I can't believe this is a preview build because it's a seriously polished version of that kind of a 3D open world game. It's pretty nuts. I actually, if it's okay, I kind of wanted to read the intro that the game gives because I think it sums it up, what the game's trying to do before we get into gameplay and how it's trying to do it. Do y'all mind if I just read it? Let me pull up my screenshots here. Okay. Chia is a game inspired by New Caledonia, a small island in the Pacific Ocean. I don't know if I'm pronouncing these words right, by the way. It is Awaseb's co-founder's homeland, and this game is a love letter to this very special place. So, and then we have a little map of Australia, and New Caledonia is like kind of to the northeast, is an island off of that coast. This game is deeply inspired by local landscapes, cultures, music, languages, folklore and traditions. Characters are voiced by local talent in French and Drehu. I don't know if I'm saying that right either. It's the most prominent languages in New Caledonia. You will get to visit our renditions of famous landmarks and biomes and listen to an original soundtrack influenced by local sonorities and performed by traditional artists and choirs. Still, the world and story of Chia are purely fictional. Names, topography, cultural details, and folklore have been changed out of respect for tradition and adapted to create a fun and engaging experience. Above all, we wanted the game to feel universal and accessible to anyone around the world. Chia has been a labor of love from a very small team, I believe it's 9 of them, of various origins and cultures. It was a blast to create, and we hope you'll have a blast diving into our world. Thank you so much from the whole AWSEB team. So, let me talk about
Drehu. Is that what the language was, Drehu?
It looks like their national languages are French and Drehu, and the NPCs are kind of trading off talking with both, which is pretty cool. So yeah, right off the bat, just from the intro and the UI alone, looking at this game in the intro and just toggling through the controls to begin the game, I'm already thinking this is a fantastic game visually if it keeps these graphics up. And after a heartfelt game dev introduction like that, I can tell this game's really inspired by real-world cultural issues. It's got a ton of heart, and the developers really care. That being said, I don't mean to be a curmudgeon, and Chris here can attest to the fact I'm super passionate, maybe too passionate about different social and political issues, but not to be a curmudgeon when it comes to gaming. I love when a game cares and is super socially aware, but if that's all I know about it, I find myself thinking that's great, but is the game actually fun to play, or is it just an excuse for me to be preached at? I only played a few hours of this game, but this game is fun as fuck. It's incredibly fun. Gameplay is smooth, polished, engaging. It's almost got an overwhelming number of options in this game. I'm about to turn it back over to Purnell. The main thing I want to say from my experience before we go back and forth here is you can go around, talk to people. You can do everything in the intro that Joe said, but there's so much more. You can eat food. You can make food. You can carve wood carvings, you can glide, you can sail on a little boat, and it's really hard because you have to do the rudder, the anchor. You can swim in the water, and there aren't, like, loading screens. It's super seamless. It's a beautiful world. Best of all, though, we're immediately dumped into a pretty big, very open world with, like, millions of options, and we're not told exactly what to do first. We're also, in my opinion, not any way overwhelmed by just the multitude of options and lack of micromanagement through what's basically a tutorial section. This is super impressive to me, because if you've been listening to the show or you know me personally, you know that when it comes to new games, I like to focus on accessibility because I'm the guy who always gets lost in the tutorial or confused. Remember Isle of Jura, you guys? Y'all were like, I don't know how she got lost in town and that game is not big enough. And yet I did for like 2 hours.
There are three houses, books. Three houses.
That was amazing. But there's so much, like, and this is a totally different game. I'm not trying to say this is better than Isle of Jura. It's a totally different thing. But if we're comparing the options, like, this is a shitload more options. It's a huge game. It's full of super fun activity crafting options. And I don't feel overwhelmed, even though they're not telling me what to do. And I feel that that's because I don't know how to describe this, and I'm about to turn it over to Pinnell, who can maybe describe this better, but like when you're navigating through town and the areas around town, little icons will kind of pop up on the map. That's like, oh, this thing that's kind of in your journal or like log of things to discover that would be helpful is nearby. So you get this organic experience of wandering around without any real goal. And it'll be like, hey, there's like a cooking and food station nearby. Or like, hey, this is where you can sail around and set some crab traps, maybe. And that's all I got from my end for now before we give some final notes.
Chris, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I like that that part of the review was bookended by Crab Hunter's subjugation, like just hints of it, not giving too much away, but it's
and
there.
I'm not a good crab hunter. Like, that's kind of my only objective. That's life or death. This lady apparently is going to kill me if I don't give her a crab, and like, I haven't given her a crab yet, you guys. I'm kind of sweating. I got to play this later tonight.
By the way, if it makes you feel any better, I got lost in the tutorial to Outbound Ghost. So
I'm not familiar with that game, but it does make me feel better.
It's one that I reviewed last week. Ooh. And it's a simple RPG like Paper Mario, but I got lost in the tutorial at some point.
If it makes you feel any better, I had to play Surgeon Simulator 2 with the ID at Xbox team. And I couldn't because I could not beat the tutorial.
You did not get your doctorate.
I did not get
your medical license.
All kinds of solidarity in the show today. I love this.
Tons of failure. Group failure.
We're here for each other. No one's proud. We're all giving examples of our own failures to make each other feel better. And like, I don't know about y'all, but I'm fucking crying over here right now.
Well,
beautiful.
Pernell, what are your thoughts on Chia?
Well, I can tell you right now, the secret to that whole thing is to never try, because I said, fuck that woman's crab. I ain't caring about it. I ain't trying to get it. I got things to do, and things to do being explore this game world, because for those who don't typically know, don't really know my gaming habits, when a demo is a thing, I don't typically engage in a lot of the antics for it, especially if it's an open world game. What I'm most concerned about is how the world traversal works. And I am honestly very pleased with how world traversal works in this game. I only wish there was a little bit more momentum when she's not doing the thing I'm about to describe in a second, but that might have been just a button I never pressed. It's very possible. But the main gimmick for world traversal in this game is that while you can run around, you can jump, you have a Zelda Breath of the Wild-esque leaf glider, the real thing that makes this game stand out is the soul jumping that you can do. Which I find funny, that's called soul jumping, because your entire damn body is entering all these animals and objects. It just rolled around in them. So most of the things you see in the game, you can do a soul jump, which is you injecting yourself into the object and then controlling it for a certain period of time. And when I say objects, I mean objects. One of the stupidest things I did was I soul jumped into a piece of meat on a grill and tried to cook myself. It was pretty ridiculous. It was like, just flip the steak. Okay, turn and turn. Good. But you can pretty much enter, you can join, jump into a fish. Like, because you, for example, you're in the water, right? And you're swimming. You decide to dive. You have an oxygen meter. But if you're a fish, you have gills, and you don't have to worry about that. So you look at a fish. You push the soul jump button, which kind of works like an FPS, like a quick shot in FPS. You select your object. You shoot. And boom, you are now a fish. And you don't have to worry about breathing because you're a goddamn fish. And then suddenly the controls change to reflect that fact. Your soul gauge will deplete over time. So you have to pretty much either get out or let the time gauge run out. And the beautiful part about this is that when you decide to leave a character or object or whatever, you don't just step out of the content. You leap out of it. It's almost like you're propelled out of the object or the thing's body. Which kind of gives you that extra bit of momentum that you can, like, if you have soul gauge left, you can aim at something else. If you see it, jump into that. You can come out of the water, and while the fish is in the air, you can propel yourself out of the water, spot a bird in the sky, bam, now I'm a bird, and you're flying around. And what I'm hoping that becomes a prominent element to is the one type of challenge I did find on the map that I engaged in, which was, like, the races. You know, a lot of those open world games have, like, you know, timed challenges you can engage in. Well, this game has races. You know, fly through a bunch of rings a la Pilot Wings before time limits up and get a cool prize. Well, I imagine the fun of being able to run, like, slide down a slope, which I was doing to get speed, and then seeing a rock on the way down, stopping the thing, the soul jump into the rock, and let the rock tumble down the hill. Like, cool stuff like that would be awesome. Turning into a bird in the middle of a time challenge because you think it would save you some time, you can make up some space or something like that. Like, those cool things really intrigue me. So much so that I will say that I'm not, the open world events things aren't bad, but they are pretty traditional for open world games. So I didn't get truly excited about that stuff. But it was the world traversal stuff that made me feel like, wow, this game, and also just the visual splendor of the game, because it is a beautiful game. These things made me really interested in where this game was going to go. And also the food. I got to mention the goddamn food, because food is how you replenish your soul gauge. You find a food cart or a vendor or what have you, and you walk up to it, push the button, a plate is presented to you, and you eat it. And it looks really good. They put a lot of attention to detail in the cuisine in this game. It's going to make you hungry. Yes, it does.
I'm like, I need some tamales ASAP. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I got to get some green tamales right now.
That's right. Hey, guys, studio guys, if you got extra time at the end of this dev cycle, if you want to slap in an unlockable recipe book, you should. You should.
That's a great idea. If it's a traditional recipe from their area, like, that's actually really cool. I'm harassing you guys on Twitter.
Oh, do God. It. Do it. Do it. It's such a good idea. They'll be happy to get it. It's like, That'd be such a great unlock to get in the game. It's like you could take the game. Hell,
believe it or not, there is a game. I know of at least one game that has done that before. The game iDarb on the Xbox.
I remember iDarb.
Yeah, you get achievements in the game and you get recipes for cookies.
Oh, that's pretty slick.
Yeah. What's this game called?
iDarb. iDarb.
Yeah, I'm checking this out.
It was one of the, I feel like it was one of the earlier Xbox One games I had.
Yeah. It was one of the early, very first games that we actually discussed, like, officially on this show, because our good friend Mike Micah is the developer of that, and he came on and chatted with us, and that was, 9 years ago?
In ancient times.
Back in the day. But Chia is a current day thing. It is coming early 2023 to PS4, PS5, and Epic Games Store. What are your thoughts on it?
Keep your eyes peeled for that. I think it is a game. Obviously, we can't give a final thought on a preview, but as far as like general sense of interest, I believe this game has got something to look forward to. This, I feel good about this, and I hope to give it a solid full play when the game releases effectively. So,
yeah, like I can't say enough good things about this game. I love, like, there's a whole musical element, and you can play a ukulele that we didn't even talk about. Like, you can be at the campfire and you can freestyle the ukulele instead of doing the special gameplay stuff. Actually, sounds really cool. I'm sad Chris didn't play it to get on this discussion because I actually think Chris would love this game. So I hope you keep that preview key and play it, because my final notes is that I already told Joe earlier I can't stay too long tonight because I got to play more of this before bed. but seriously, after giving us a review copy of this, like, it was a really smart move and literally how they get you, because my final note here is I'm definitely going to purchase the full copy of this game when it drops. No questions asked. I'm only a few hours in, like I said. And I don't even know how much this costs yet, but I would imagine, based on quality and breadth of this game, it's going to be expensive, and I'm going to buy it.
My ideas. Let's see if they go, you know, reasonable price. You might be like, hey, guys, $30. We're being modest over here. And I'm going to go, thank you.
$100, and then I can have it, and Pernell doesn't, and it'll be like the S'mores Mountain Dew set or whatever.
No!
Think about it.
I want a bottle of beer.
Only 70 digital versions will be produced.
Each one with a unique pet.
Oh, and you can pet the cat, by the way.
Yay.
Oh, boy.
Cool. Yum, all right. Yum, yum. Next game to talk about is Polaroid, developed and published by Optimal Games. This one released January 6th on Steam for $4.99. Polaroid is a first-person horror game where a simple job turns into a horrific nightmare. Brooke, what's going on in Polaroid?
Okay, well, this episode's going to be a really good snapshot of, like, the two sides of my soul. Because, all right, it's a $5 game on Steam. Pretty simple game. Got kind of a game jam game feel going on. Got kind of an interesting idea for it. First person, 3D, like Joe said, open room game, I would call it. We got some Wolfenstein 3D level graphics going on, which is fine. You wake up in a weird warehouse looking area, and you're guided to a room nearby where you're met by a creepy NPC who tasks you with a job. Your job is to input 3 numbers into a number pad and then hit a button to print a photo. Then you pick up the photo from the printer, then you walk it to the back of the room, put that photo into a box. If you want, you can look at the photo while you walk over there. It's definitely going to be some vaguely creepy black and white photo. Maybe it looks like Jesus. Maybe it's a baby with a face that looks a little too much like a skull. Maybe it's a pig. Maybe it's a bloody pig. Maybe it's a creepy lady in a wedding veil. Maybe it's a picture of Jesus and a pig.
Maybe it's baby Jesus.
I sure hope so. This game is a horror game. Mostly all the horror is just jump scares, to be honest. It's kind of trying to have a bit of a sense of humor, slight bit like another horror game we reviewed last year, Happy's Humble Burger Farm. Happy's Humble Burger Farm. That's how it's pronounced, Brooke. But it does have very much of a sense of humor in the development. We don't really know past the intro of the game where we get a little bit of creepy office humor before the horror sets in. This game's meant to be about an hour or two of gameplay. It wants you to print out about 120 photos in total, walk them to the back of the room. A few times in between doing this, you'll be interrupted by some jump scare shadowy figure. At this point, you need to pick up the Polaroid camera in the room, right-click to use the flash, and if you do this before the shadowy figure kills you, you get to keep printing photos and walking them to the back of the room and putting it in the box.
Now, is there a reason for the walking and the pictures? Or, like, is that resolved?
It is not. It's just your weird job. And there is kind of a creepy underworld, like, oh, why am I doing this? I don't understand. And there are these, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers away of a short game, but
yeah,
there's kind of like a creepy company like thing going on, almost like a conspiracy theory sort of hint to it. But it's not super developed. I'll go ahead and jump into the rating here. Unfortunately, I've got to give this one a deny it. And yeah, it hurts me more than it hurts them, 100%. Nothing makes me sadder than having to give a $5 game a deny it, because if you've known me very long at all, it doesn't take a lot to make me have fun and stay entertained and you know, at least give a game a few dollars for a little bit of my time. I was able to count my deny it's I've ever given on one hand on this show. Now this is my sixth deny it, and we're at two hands now. I'm a little grumpy about that, but ultimately,
one for the thumb.
Yeah, with the thumb. But ultimately, even though I think an hour or two of entertainment is always worth at least $5, like there have been some games where like I paid $30 for 2 hours and I had a blast. Like, if I'm having a good time, I'll pay a lot of money for that relative to me. I wasn't really entertained and engaged by this game at almost any point. I was a little bored, kind of frustrated, and that nothing really happened. And I don't feel that completing the game and doing like all around 120 photos really made that time pay off. I was wondering, oh, if I finish this, they're going to be a surprise, and then it's going to. I really did just print out over 100 photos, walk them to the back of the room, and tried not to die. There was a little tension there with the jump scares a bit, and anticipating the next one as I tried to do a monotonous task. It kind of like does get you into a work zone of kind of lulling you into it and then trying to scare you. So I see what it's trying to do there. There was also a slight amount of tension back when I thought I probably had to at least do a different three-digit string of numbers each time to print a different photo. At first, I was just using area codes of different places I've lived, but then I figured I'd just try it and see if I could just do the number 111 every time and it would just be a random photo. And you can. And I don't really have a problem with that, but that kind of did speak to like sort of this feeling more like a game jam game that just hasn't had a ton of time put into it.
No.
Final note, while I don't hate this game at all, I think it's an interesting idea, and I'd be very interested to see another project from these devs. One thing I can't forgive is if you're going to do a gritty horror game with a sense of humor, and the single creative mechanic of the game is inputting three numbers, and you don't do anything special at all, when the three numbers I choose are 666, 420, or even 069, come on, man.
Yeah, there. You should.
What are you doing?
You should definitely have some fun numbers in there.
At least, like, I was like one of the first five numbers. I was like, oh, 666. This is gonna be good. And it was like, yeah. I mean, you can click that button as many times, but you guys see what I mean.
Yeah.
I think this team shows some promise. I think this was a neat idea, but I would call this kind of a game jammy game.
What could they do to improve it?
Well, they already have a few updates coming on the way. In the next update, they're going to add a higher difficulty. I'm interested to see what that looks like. They are soon, allegedly going to add captions. So both of those are a nice start. I don't know. Do we need to change the game like mechanics, or do we need to add like a few more encounters in the middle of like the 120 photos? I think maybe you get attacked like 4 or 5 times, I want to say. Maybe something like that, but I'd have to think about that question more.
No, well, I know
gotta unjam it.
The game page mentions that it has lots of secrets, like it says that there's a cat that you could pet, there's different cabins you could go in and find. Ooh, notes.
I didn't find the cat.
There's hidden VHS tapes.
Yeah, it kind of does some things like if you played, what is that game? So like Bioshock Infinite, Bioshock series, you can kind of like get some stuff and play some recordings, and it's interesting. I do think like
not
if you're going to go for like secrets or achievement heavy, like you already have to complete the game one time to start getting more into that territory. And like, even though it's going to probably take most people, even me, like about an hour to finish the game, it's kind of a big time sink for the type of gameplay. But, you know, I'm all like, I did spend an hour in this show talking about like how stupid I am and how much stuff I miss. So keep in mind, I could have missed a bunch of cool stuff.
All right. Well, I guess at $5, it's still not worth it yet. So maybe in the future,
unfortunately for me.
Yeah. Maybe in the future, if they add some updates, we could take another look at it. But for now, oh well.
Yeah.
But that is it for you, Brooke.
I know it was a dark note, but I was really hyped. I'm really hyped about the other game, and I was really hyped to reconnect with you guys tonight. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Welcome back.
We're glad that you're back. We're glad you had fun with the the whole partying, and I'm excited for your bun in the future.
Oh my God, we didn't even talk about my bunny. We'll have to save that for next episode to talk about that.
Are you going to name it Bun?
By the way, I did like the rabbit video.
Thank you. I actually have another one from yesterday, and he's doing the exact same thing. He's flipping out and running around and jumping, and everyone else is just kind of standing there looking at him. Everyone else being other rabbits, that is. So he truly is my son.
Hell yeah.
All right. Good night, you guys. I'll talk to you next week at the latest, probably each of you.
See you on the flip side.
Good night, guys. Bye.
See ya. Guess that means Aki's leaving, too.
I forgot she was here. But she left already. Oh, she did leave already.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay.
Oh, she probably left when the reviews started.
Maybe. Next game to talk about is Never Awake, developed by Neotro Inc., published by Phoenix. Released January 19th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $24.99. A girl who never wakes up. She's been fighting monsters in her dreams. Never Awake is a nightmarish twin-stick shooter with a unique worldview and original game rules. Pernell, what is going on in Never Awake?
Never Awake, you play, well, you kind of said that part. So the gameplay mechanic, however, is that you play kind of as like the inner thoughts of this girl, and you are battling through her nightmares. So each area of the game takes place in what can be considered like a sort of like a nightmare for her, something that haunts her. And it ends up being like interesting stuff up through like more difficult or deep stuff. Like, I mean, the first level of the game, the level's theme is that she dislikes vegetables, so you're fighting in a vegetable forest, and all the enemies are, or most of the enemies are related to different vegetables, and basically vegetables she hates. So the imagination comes from the types of enemies and the types of places you go. However, the actual art for these creatures is pretty dark. It's got some freaking heavy in Tim Burton elements going on with it, which I think is fantastic. The art direction in this game is really good. Now, the way the levels work is very different from what you'd expect out of a traditional shooter. Normally in a shooter, you're going from the beginning of the level to the end of the level, and there's a boss, you kill it, and you're done. But in this game, each world consists of about 10 or so, sub-levels. And when you enter the sub-level, your goal isn't to get to the end of the stage, but to actually collect a series of souls that's dropped from different enemies. The game progression in a level involves you going through a short snippet of a stage, which is considered a loop. Each time you get to the end of that, if you haven't collected all the souls, the level loops and you do it again. But the enemies get harder, which means it's more prone for you to fail. So the goal is ultimately to get as many souls as you can, as quickly as you can, and exit the stage by doing so. Souls also act, well, not souls as it's currently, but there's also like a currency that you pick up while you play the game too, which can be spent in the shop, which I'll talk about in a second. Your firearms consist of a main gun, which you can unlock power-ups for through progression of the game, but also a sub-weapon that you will bring to level with you, also unlock as you progress through the game. I don't know what triggers these unlocks, mind you. And the reason I say that is because I played for a bit of the game. Then, after getting to a particular boss, I was like, wow, this boss has some really cool music. I want to hear it again. I'll just see what other people are doing, how they're playing, because I found a stream where someone was playing it. And when they went to their configuration screen with the same boss, they had a completely different set of items than I had access to. So it seemed weird, but I guess it could be progress-based. Like, I noticed he had an item, like a specific type of skull lipstick, that gave you more money based on how much damage you took, which maybe implied that he died a lot and unlocked this item because he was taking damage, so the game found a way to reward him for that or to make it easier on him going forward. But you unlock things at different rates based on how you play the game. And you use your currency to buy those items to equip. And like I mentioned before, the items could be elements that could augment your gameplay, like maybe increase your firepower or maybe give you more health. One that lets you carry souls between like level or expand like your soul capacity or something like that. But then there's other items like new sub weapons that you can equip and more powerful versions of those sub weapons. And then lastly, there might be an item that lets you increase the number of accessory slots you have, which are the different like buffs that you can have and stuff like that. I found myself very much engaged with this game. The idea that a level is meant to be done in short bursts means that it incentivizes the player to go in and set high scores. Further, showing the motivation for that by there being an actual high score in the game. And the high score tallies are broken up by two categories, one being where you use auto-aim and one where you don't. Well, auto-aim and a couple of specific items that they deny your ability to use in order to be on that ranking. And I like that they do that because what it does is it says, hey, if you want to play the game using the assist that we have for you, there's a ranking chart for that. So you can feel like you're totally included. You can have fun with the game, set high scores and stuff. But if you feel as though you don't want auto-aim and you don't want the items that make the game a bit easier for you, you can turn those off and you're under a second high score list. But the actual gameplay itself doesn't change, which is good. That means that people can enjoy the game however they want and they can be grouped how they want for high scores. Because the other end of that is they don't have to worry about competing with people who are getting higher scores than them just by virtue of the fact that they're using different mechanics than they did. So I do like that they did that. And there was a couple of times where I went and intentionally set a score on both high score ranking charts.
Speaking of scores, I think the Never Awake store page might have a high score of SML's favorite, Chris.
Wait, what?
Let's see. We've got 5 uses of the word unique on its store page. We have, get this, Never Awake is a nightmarish twin stick shooter with a unique worldview and original game rules. Okay. Never Awake has a unique worldview. Okay. With its high quality hand drawn graphics and beautiful animations, with over 80 levels, dozens of bosses, and a unique gameplay system that allows players to retry many levels, Never Awake is suitable for both beginner shooters and experts. And then under the features, unique game rules and high retryability, and a unique worldview set in the inside of a girl's nightmare. Like, they're all the same usage. They stretched it
strong with this one.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Good pastor lives on forever.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that. He was a good dude that I've never met.
Yeah. None of us have met him. I don't think any of us have ever communicated. Anyway, this game is $24.99. What are your thoughts on it, Purnell?
Oh, this is an easy buy recommendation. It is a fantastic game, and I feel like once you start playing it, you will lose a good chunk of time to the addictive qualities that it provides.
And is it unique?
Yes, it is unique. There, I said it. I'm proud I said it, too. It's unique.
Wow.
Nice. Next game, Wings of Blue Star, developed by Shunu Real Arts, published by East Asia Soft, released January 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Blast off for a story-driven shoot-em-up experience unlike any other, as mankind faces the remnants of a mysterious artificial intelligence. It's up to trainee pilot Aya and veteran ace Zarak to investigate the resurgent threat against free space. Along the way, these defenders of peace will need to confront their past and learn more about themselves before they can uncover the truth of their enemies. Chris, what is going on in Wings of Blue Star?
Okay, so Wings of Blue Star. This is a shmup, a shoot-em-up, side-scrolling shoot-em-up. Well, actually, it does a little bit of vertical scrolling, but your ship is facing to the right, so it's side-scrolling. So this is basically an attempt to take a classic kind of shmup, a little bit like Darius. It's a little bit R-type as well. Definitely with one of the characters, you'll see some R-typiness. And then they just basically tried to throw a visual novel into one part of it that is, you know, basically touted as a feature. Rootbeard asks, what is a shmup? I must defer to Beaker Unlimited if you want to the rundown on what a shmup is. I wonder if I still have that YouTube video. Anyway, so basically, you pick one of these two characters. They each have like a little bit of a different approach, and the game is divided into push the wrong button here.
Are you pulling up YouTube videos?
No. No, not at all.
Not those kind of videos.
Hey there, YouTube. Welcome back to... No, just kidding. Don't forget to smash that, I don't know,
like, face. Comment, and subscribe below, bro.
Yeah. Okay, so, I was just going to say it's divided into a couple of different modes. with a tutorial that I did play, and then like I was like, I don't think I really need this. But it does have a playable tutorial mode, but it basically does story mode and arcade mode. So story mode will take you through the visual novel and all the 8 stages of the game as either one of the two characters. So you basically, there's some overarching story that happens no matter what character you pick, but you know, you're going to be basically seeing the world through the eyes of these people. And one of them is an amnesiac, and the other is like a kind of half robot girl who is obsessed with her brother, who might be evil, or definitely is evil. We don't know unless we play through the whole game. So yeah, that's the setting of the game, is that, you know, people found an ancient advanced intelligence that they cleverly named Brain. And they were like, and then Brain like basically advanced all of human civilization with its ancient secrets. And but then eventually Brain was like, hey, you know, now that you guys are like super intelligent and, you know, can extend your lives and have all these robot parts, how would you like to be just robots and live forever, huh? All you got to do is give up your free will. And yeah, that's what some of the folks are fighting against. It's a pretty good premise. I like a nice classic sci-fi premise like that. But yeah, so basically in story mode, you play through the story of your, you know, characters dealing with their personal issues while trying to defeat a big ol' artificial intelligence. And then the arcade mode takes away all of that, and you just play the shooter. Just play the 8 stages in a row. Now, the thing is that this is a little bit of a quarter muncher. That is to say, it has limited continues. However, you have a aggregate score that is kept of what's called risk points. Risk points are, you know, they show up in the level sometimes randomly when you defeat an enemy. When you defeat an enemy ship, they're little stars, and if you collect them, you get like 100 of them, and then you get bonuses for other things. The main thing of which is collecting all 6 pieces of the picture of a pop idol named Patima, who is in every stage. I'm a little sad that it's the same picture every time. I'm like, well, wouldn't it be more fun if it was like 8 different pictures? You couldn't draw 8 different pictures of a robot lady?
Yeah, really? And, come on.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like she shows up sometimes in the story and everybody's obsessed with her. And I'm like, yeah, this is pretty cool. Like, maybe we can expand this a little. And that kind of like leads to my big elephant in the room in this game, is that there's a lot of good ideas here that were either maybe rushed or just half implemented. So like, you know, the story kind of has it has the visual novel thing where you make choices, right? But the game locks away some of these choices. You just don't get to choose them, and it doesn't tell you why. It doesn't tell you, oh, you didn't meet a condition to choose this option. It's just you get this one option and you get to look at the other option. And that's inconsistent, because sometimes you will get 2 options, and if you choose the more like the less self-serving option, then you get a bonus of risk points. And and like I was saying before about risk points, is that you can spend them in a risk point shop, and there you can do things like purchase an image gallery or the soundtrack, or more continues for the arcade and story mode, which is literally all of what I have spent every single one of my points on, because the game does have like that R-Type and Darius thing of like, you know, you're gonna get killed often in certain parts of the game for very unfair reasons, like thin corridors, enemies coming up behind you that you can't stop, you know, unless you just absolutely know like what's going on. And then, you know, you suddenly burn through 3 continues and you're still not at the like midpoint of the stage, you know. So it's like, and you start with 3 continues, and here's the thing that's, I don't know if it's clever or not, but it is a fact. So you do have limited continues, at which point you have to start the game over. The thing is, in story mode, whether you get a game, a big game over, or just turn the game off or whatever, you can start from the same level. So you get three continues to get through each stage, essentially. Or again, however many continues you can purchase with risk points. But yeah, so it's like story mode is like the much easier way to beat the game. Because it allows you to just start on the level that you were last on with whichever character. And so that's kind of interesting. And they also say that the game has different endings, and I assume that it's because of, probably because of, I don't know if it has anything to do with the gameplay or the choices you make in the visual novel field.
I would assume the visual novel stuff leads to the endings, but...
But the game doesn't tell you. It just doesn't. It has a whole tutorial mode, but it doesn't tell you anything about like the visual novel side of things. But anyways, apart from that, it's got a two-player mode. And like I said, the bonus mode has a lot of unlockables, and you can just keep dumping all your points into continues if you like. I think I'm up to 14 now, but I still haven't beaten the game. Anyways, so the actual gameplay, like I said, is good. I think that is the big highlight of this game. You know, the visual novel part... You know, I was with it at first, and then it just got kind of long, and it would do things like you can quickly scroll through the text or fill up the text in the text box if you push A, but if they're denoting an action, you have to wait for it to disappear and wait for the screen to like transition and stuff, and it's like 5 seconds long or whatever. Like it types slowly, the Zarek has left the room, and then you're like, okay. Oh, there's the next line. Okay, now we're back to reading fast. And so, know what's up with that.
Well, as it stands, it's $15. What are your thoughts on it?
Ultimately, this is a good $15 shmup. So I was just going to say the gameplay saves it because it is fun to play. I honestly, I'm not sure if I'm sold on the visual novel part of it. Feel like that could use some improvement. But, you know, the aesthetics are cool. Like I said, it's all hand-drawn. Soundtrack's good. It's fun to play. Like I said, if you keep gaining those points every time you lose and then keep dumping them into extra continues, then, you know, you'll have spent a lot of time and eventually, you know, either get good or refuse to get good and purchase your way through the game. So I like that. So, yeah, I'm giving it a buy it. But I'm going to tell most shmup fans they're going to probably want to just play this on arcade mode.
Cool. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is Sonority, developed by Hanging Gardens Interactive, published by Application Systems Heidelberg, released December 21st on the Switch for $19.99. A unique puzzle mechanic using melodies. In Sonority, the players experience a lost world in which music is magic, and with whose help you can progress through the game. The puzzles are solved by the correct arrangement of notes. The solution is deduced acoustically or using symbols. No previous musical knowledge necessary. Purnell, what did you think of Sonority on the Switch?
Feel as though, for the most part, they are right and no musical knowledge is needed for this game. That there will be a part or two here and there where you might wish you had it. But that's not to say that you can't solve it without musical knowledge. It's just get better at hearing tones, essentially. But the idea behind the game is that you are a girl named Esther who has traveled to this place to find what is hopefully a magical melody to mend her friend, who is a talking bear. And the way she's meant to do this is by finding her way through this temple or this region where everything is associated with the power of music. Early in the game, she comes across a pan flute. And she is able to play one note on that pan flute initially. What ends up happening, though, as you progress, though, is you'll discover more notes. And these notes run on the musical scale. I'm going to get this lettering wrong, but it's like G through like C2. And you might hear that and go, what the hell are you talking about? And that's fine. You don't have to understand it because they do something pretty clever, which I'll explain in a second. And as you take these instruments, these notes, and as you learn more of them and expand on your repertoire, each note is associated with one of the buttons on your controller, and you have to press that button in respective timing to get the note sound you want out. Why would you want to play specific note sound? Well, to solve puzzles, you dummy. There are different puzzles littered throughout this game which will impede your progress to progress to the temple, and they all revolve around playing this pan flute in some way. For example, the majority of the time you'll come across puzzles where there'll be a pressure plate on the floor with a ley line running from it to a series of pillars. These pillars are meant to have a musical note embedded in them, so that when you've embedded the right note across all these pillars and press the pressure plate, a series of platforms and like walls will either ascend, descend, or extend as needed to progress to the next section. Now, again, you might be saying, well, Pernell, if you need to inject the right musical note to these platforms and I don't understand music, how am I supposed to make sense of this? Well, here's the trick. They also associate these with numbers, because how earlier I mentioned the scale. They also use the scale in a numeric sense, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And what I came to quickly realize about this game is that what you're essentially solving in puzzles like this are simple math problems. For example, you might see a pillar that's extending from the ground that's blocking your progress. You come across a series of these note pillars, and you have access to C, D, and E as notes to play, right? And let's say those are associated with 1, 2, and 3. Well, you know that the pillar is extending upwards. You need to come down two segments for you to walk across it. So the secret would be to play the three note and then the one note, because it starts at three, subtract two, you get one, which means the tower comes down two, and now you can cross. So it becomes simple math problems. Okay, but it gets a little more complicated when they start linking these things up. So it might be four pillars, and across all four pillars, you're ultimately manipulating three different objects. Or there might be a scenario where there's three different pressure plates, and those pressure plates share one or two pillars, which now means you need to be able to combine. You need to use a note in one pillar that's agreeable with every other pattern. And it gets to be pretty interesting. I was having fun trying to solve these things, but I'm also a sucker for math problems too. And I like music, despite being completely inept with understanding the actual technicalities of any of it, but that's fine. I find this to be clever. Like they said, you know, unique mechanic, and I'm sure a lot of people might hear this and go, how the hell is this unique? You're literally just manipulating blocks by hitting switches. You're not wrong. But I do feel that in a genre that works like this, there is still something pretty interestingly different about using musical notes to convey the idea across, especially when you get to some of the puzzles where it is tone related and you have to hear a tone and replay it back, which means you need to kind of understand what you're playing. So you're like playing the playing flute going, okay, I hear that sound. That's the sound here. I'll play that. And then I'll hear that sound. I'm going to play that sound. And then you complete the entire sequence because you start to understand what you're listening to.
You there? I think my internet is shitting out. Oh, this is fun.
Can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear Joe, too.
You can hear me okay?
Uh-huh.
Yes, we both can hear you.
Oh, like everything's disconnecting over here. OBS is disconnected.
Can you hear Chris? Chris, can he hear you?
Yeah, I think so.
I can hear everyone okay.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're not losing your recording or anything. But the important part is you're not losing the recording, at least. It's still good.
No, recording's still going, so.
That's the most important part. Okay, good. No shit.
If someone has access to the chat room, just let them know that I guess I'll be back.
After these messages.
Reconnection successful. There we go.
Oh, there it is.
Joe will be right back. Hey, we're back. Woo! This breakdown in the review brought to you by BreezeLine Internet. Thank you for being shitty. So yeah, Sonority's 20. Yeah, no barks.
Barks got bite. No number.
Yeah, I got one more. Whole bulldog.
That is true. I have one or two more things to say. It's not ready yet.
Okay, what you got?
Hush your fuss. The main downsides of the game that I felt was that one is a little negligible, not much of a concern for some people, which is that they tried to inject a collectible in the game in the form of like these little like golden emblems that you can find on the map. But their whole real purpose is just to inject them into stones to get a little bit more lore. So if you're a fan of like the environment and the world you're playing through, then you'll want to grab those. But me, I was just kind of like, I like hearing Esther talk to the raccoon and all that, but I wasn't particularly like jumpy about what's this world's detail about. But if you are, then you'll be fine with it. I wasn't so much. But the other actual issue that some people might care about is performance-wise. Now, this is a puzzle game, so you don't necessarily need like 60 frames per second or whatever. But I will say that the game was, there was like definitely like some moments of like jitteriness as I was playing it in handheld mode, walking around. It wasn't smooth all the time. And it definitely felt like it was showing its age running on the Switch for some reason, which it shouldn't because it's not that intensive. But it was still something worth pointing out because some people can be real sticklers about performance in a game.
Yeah.
Performance
is going to be an important thing now that the Steam Deck is a thing. I think performance is something a lot of gamers are going to take into account when they decide if they want to get something on Steam or on the Switch.
Not disagreeing with that, except for the one element that, at least for me personally, that Steam Deck ain't cheap. I feel like, personally, the Steam Deck and the Switch markets are connected yet also different. It's almost like Steam Deck is high-end gaming and the Switch is more like, I like gaming and I can afford this, so I'm getting it. Also, I just like Nintendo, so I'm getting it. So it's like there's like different strokes in a sense there. Though I will say, having both systems, I would definitely prefer it on the Steam Deck in that sense, just because of that. But with that said, I still think this game is a good time, and I still think that this game is worth your time for just solving the puzzles and running through it. So in that regard, for $20, I do believe it deserves as a buy.
Cool beans.
Delicious beans.
All right, we are finished. That is it for this episode. We made it through.
Oh, boy. Only 3 minutes.
That was a short episode.
Yeah, only 3 minutes.
That was a short episode for us. That actually was a short episode for us. That's not even 11:30.
Hour 20. Not bad.
Man, for us, that's short.
And it could have been shorter, too. We could have gotten a lot shorter.
We would have missed out on all that fun conversation.
Could have speed ran that fucker in under an hour if we tried, I bet you.
And just like with a real speed run, you miss out on so much in the process.
Yes, like this ending banter of us talking about what if.
That's right.
I'm not the one who brought it up.
Eat your heart out, Marvel. What ifs? We got you beat.
We got the SML what ifs. What if we had a giant contest?
Go on.
Loyal listeners, be sure to keep an eye on our Twitters because in the coming week or so, we're going to have a big ass contest starting and you're going to be able to win your choice of like
biggest ass wins.
There's a prize pool of over 80 games right now, and the winner is going to get like way too many of them.
It'll be sweet.
It will be very sweet for at least 3 people, I think. Math wise, I think we're going to do 3 winners. It is bonkers. It is going to be crazy. Tons of games are going to be thrown at people. It's going to be a unique experience. It will be a unique experience. Fall into the abyss of the SML podcast and its unique experience. Music, what should we play this episode?
I don't know. I never think about that, which is funny because my whole life revolves around music.
Yeah, what are you playing on the show this week, Pernell?
This episode is a Patreon episode, so I'm not choosing any of it. But,
Guitaru Man, that's a good idea. No, I'm going to play some Guitaru Man.
I had an idea. Get your ass back here. Lame Genie. Play something from Lame Genie.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Any final words?
Yeah, play something from Lame Genie. Also, welcome back. Happy New Year, everybody. Tip your waiters.
That was bartenders. Last week.
Wait your tippers.
I'm doing it again. I'm telling them to tip people. It's good. Builds character.